We start today with a new WBUR series on a thing called PFAS. Now, that stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. But from here on out, you only need to remember PFAS, and you will remember them because they are everywhere. Carpets, umbrellas, nonstick pans, dental floss, nail polish, our bodies. Well, roughly 98% of us, so most of us. And unfortunately, they are bad for you, they basically never go away, and they're extremely difficult to remove. I'm sorry. Now, from the newsroom, Barbara Moran and Gabriella Emanuel launch a whole series on PFAS this week, and they are here to tell us about it. And we've been cracking up since before the show started about sort of the desperation of learning about PFAS. Barbara is the correspondent on WBUR's correspondent on WBUR's climate and environmental team. Gabriella Emanuel, WBUR senior health and science reporter. I guess welcome to
two of you today. Don't shoot the messengers.
Why you gotta do this to us, Barb? I mean, I was staring at my pans this weekend like they wanted to kill me prepping for this. This stuff is really everywhere.
It is everywhere. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I know Gabrielle and I have been grappling with the subject for months now. And
it's driving us crazy.
What got you started?
What got you started? Oh, me, my fault. I got started on the water question because there are probably new regulations coming out next month that are going to be much stricter than the current water regulation. So we figured this is a good time to really be looking into this and how it's going to affect people in Massachusetts. So that's why now.
Okay, so we do have to dive into what this is. And, and we're going to start with this PFAS. I gave that name, but it's a whole bunch of chemicals. Often also called forever chemicals. Gabriella, tell us a little bit more about what PFAS is.
Yes. Well, PFAS, actually, Barb is the expert on exactly what they are, but they were invented way back 1930s and then became commonly used starting in the 50s. And they are still commonly used, put into all sorts of products to this day.
And we liked them because they did what?
Everything. They're awesome. So they're, except they're toxic. But so they have all these really good chemical properties where they make things waterproof and stainproof and oilproof. So they're using all kinds of things like food wrapping, waterproof raincoats. They're widely used or have been widely used in firefighting foam. And that's where a lot of the contamination comes from. But tons and tons of consumer products, cosmetics.
So if something doesn't stick, it doesn't stain, it doesn't burn, it doesn't dissolve in water, it's probably PFAS.
Yeah, like that waterproof mascara that you love.
Shut up.
Sorry. We're going to keep saying sorry over and over. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So now, started in the 1930s. They get exposure. How do we get exposure to them? Because here's what I found myself thinking. Gabriella is signaling to me that you want to answer this one.
Yeah.
If they're that impervious, then why is it that they're also incredibly leaky into me, right?
Yes. So there are, in general, if you want to think about three buckets of ways we can be exposed. The first is in our food and water, and not just food, but food packaging, kitchen supplies. It can get from there into your food. Next is through the air. We can breathe it in. This is what we're talking about. Stain-resistant coatings are very thin but highly concentrated such that these chemicals can kind of rub off and go everywhere. And then the last one that we are just beginning to understand is that they can be absorbed through your skin. Less is absorbed through your skin than through drinking or eating it, but it seems like it can go in through your skin.
So this is where nail polish, dental floss could be an issue because that's kind of like osmosis, like transfers into your skin.
So lotions, sunscreens, if cosmetics, if you put them on your skin, it seems like some percent of it can be absorbed through your skin. But the biggest issue we should be worrying about is most likely water and food.
So let's pick up on that for a minute. So Barb, I'm thinking about two things with you. One, you're a climate reporter. Two, you did the Cooked newsletter where you were cleaning up some of what you ate for environmental reasons. There have to be huge environmental implications of a forever chemical. Basically means you can't get rid of it, right?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't break down naturally.
Okay.
Right. So if it gets into water and lakes and streams, it basically stays there. Sunlight doesn't break it down, or microbes don't really break it down. It lasts forever. So
what does that do to the environment other than our bodies, our health?
There's not a ton known about what it does. They're only like beginning to scratch the surface of it. They're just, you know, we're just grappling with the human consequences of it now. So they know it gets into fish. They know it gets into plants. They know it gets into these marine ecosystems. But how that is affecting the whole ecosystem is still just beginning to be studied. But they are looking at how the water sort of works its way through groundwater and into our drinking water, and like how it works its way into fish that we end up eating. So that's sort of where the major scientific focus is now.
So in your reporting coverage on this, Gabriella, okay, body. I mean, I almost don't want to ask, but they're everywhere. Somewhat ubiquitous in product making since the 1930s, don't break down on their own, transferable by air, water, food.
Yeah.
So what does that mean it can do to us?
So there are a couple ways to look at it. You can look at what exactly it's doing inside the body, and you can also look at what the health implications are. And I should say up front, we are still learning a ton about this. So the information,
we being the scientific community,
yes. Okay. So as you mentioned, there are thousands of these. Only a few have actually been well studied. So that is where our information is coming from, these kind of small number of PFAS chemicals that have been well studied. But the big thing of how it's impacting our body is because it's forever chemicals, it stays in our body for a very long time. It's very well absorbed, and it's very hard to eliminate it. So a few examples here. If you think about caffeine, if you think about BPA, the plastics chemical, if you think about Tylenol, those leave your body in a matter of hours. Lead leaves your blood in...
Wait, I'm sorry. Were you implying that there's PFAS in Tylenol?
No.
No.
Those just leave your body in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
Lead leaves your blood in a matter of months. PFAS is there for years, often many years, sometimes topping a decade. These are the most prevalent types of PFAS. So that is one of the reasons it has these huge range of effects on our health, is because they are in our body, they're building up there over a very long time. But when you look at the health consequences, the list of things that seem to be linked to PFAS is enormous. I mean, we're talking everything from like thyroid disruptions to a reduced reaction to childhood vaccinations, kidney and testicular cancer, or some evidence for it being linked to obesity, fatty liver. I mean, you can keep going on with this list. And people have said to me, real experts, that it's hard to find an organ system that isn't impacted by PFAS.
And as we understand it, the estimate is that the vast majority of people in the United States, upwards of 98%,
yes,
have some level of PFAS in, yes, their bodies.
Yes.
All right. Now that we have just thunderstruck everybody listening to Radio Boston, I want to start talking about limiting exposure, how we can start to prevent in our household, et cetera. So Barbara Moran, we pulled this little bit of sound. Okay, so it is from David Cash. He is the new regional administrator for our region. That's called EPA Region 1, which includes Massachusetts. We talked to him back in August about the challenges in measuring for PFAS as new standards on the two main PFAS chemicals, which are for 0.02 and 0.04 parts per trillion or less, were being discussed.
For some of these, it's going to be below what we can track, although science is advancing very quickly on this.
Okay, so basically saying what we think is acceptable is actually an amount that's too small for us to track right now. So what can we track? What are we tracking?
So what's interesting about this is about the drinking water levels. And the federal government right now has no standards for drinking water. He's talking about health advisories that came out. Massachusetts has some of the strictest drinking water standards in the country right now, and they've had them for about 2 years. So the good news, there's some good news in this, is that water in Massachusetts, if you drink municipal water, it's safe. All the water has been tested, or almost all of it, and everybody who had high PFAS levels, it's been mitigated in Massachusetts. So your water is safe. Private wells, another issue. We'll get to that in a second. The EPA is expected to come out with these levels, these very, very stricter levels. And that's the question is, like, it's seeming like it should be almost at zero, right? But you can't even detect that. So, you know, the these EPA regulations have been held up. They've been, we're supposed to come out in December and they're not out yet. And I think that's what they're wrestling with, is what are we going to do?
Okay. So, and I'm not sure which of you to ask, Barbara and Gabriella. So I'll ask the question. You guys decide who to answer. So what do you do at home, right? Mm-hmm. What can you begin to do to at least mitigate one's exposure if one assumes, okay, already in my body, right?
Yes.
What can I do at home to begin to mitigate my exposure?
I would say the first thing is, if you have a private well, and there are over 500,000 people in Massachusetts who have private wells.
Me being one of them.
Yes. Get your well tested. It does cost a couple $100s, but you should get it tested. And then if you do have high levels of PFAS, you should get a filter put in or get an alternate source of water. And that's sort of the big thing you should deal with first.
And is this – go ahead, Gabriella.
No, so yes, every expert I've talked to has said, first, check the water if you are on well water. But then there are other things you can do in terms of, if you think about those buckets, food, air, skin, you can try to limit it in each of those areas. So food, it's really, we don't have good information on which food groups have the highest concentration. So don't think about that right now, especially in the U.S. There is some European data, but think about kind of all the things you're using to prepare your food. Mm-hmm. If you get a sandwich out at a store and it's wrapped in kind of grease-resistant paper, don't keep it in that paper if you're saving it for later. Don't heat it up in that paper if you're heating it up. Don't use nonstick cookware, we keep hearing. Microwave popcorn, everyone hates microwave popcorn. Don't microwave your popcorn in those bags that they kind of
really
come. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, don't microwave stuff in plastic. Don't microwave it in the takeout containers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
In terms of the air, it's those thin layers that make something waterproof or stain resistant. So don't spray your couch or your rug with stain resistant spray.
That stuff they sell you to spray on your leather shoes mm-hmm. to keep it. Don't do that.
Waterproof. Yeah, probably not.
Okay.
Definitely not. So that's getting in the air. You can use a HEPA filter in your house. That's another recommendation. And then in terms of dermal, your skin exposure, you can check websites to see what products and brands have pledged to not have PFAS.
Okay, so we've touched on it. We've apologized to listeners for how stressful this is. But Barbara, there's going to be reporting all week. Can you kind of just give me a heads up on what the reporting is going to be all week on WBUR?
Absolutely, yeah. So my stories talk a little more in depth about these water issues, how much it's costing towns in Massachusetts to clean the PFAS out of their water, and discussion about private wells.
And
Gabriella does the hard story.
No. It's just what happens once it gets into your body. What is giving it this huge effect? And then tips for what individuals can do.
All right. And have you changed your own habits?
Oh, yeah. My husband has banned me from talking about PFAS anymore because paranoid.
And Barbara?
I chucked all our dental floss.
Oi!
I bought new dental floss. I'm still flossing. But just
without the anti-stick glide kind of stuff.
Yeah, with this horrible string floss.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. Barbara Moran, new flosser of a different brand, correspondent of WBUR's climate and environmental team. Gabriella Emanuel, WBUR's senior health and science reporter. I guess thank you to both of us.
Thanks.
And thank you. No, seriously, thank you for your reporting. This seems really important.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks.
And you can hear that reporting all week on WBUR, and you can find tips like the ones we discussed on how to reduce your exposure to these forever chemicals at the website wbur.org.